The Two Man Game Podcast is brought to you by Renaissance Insurance, Ryan Hicks.
What's up, guys? It's head coach of the Bears, Steve Smiley, and I'm honored to tell KFKA listeners all about my guy, Ryan Hicks, and Renaissance Insurance. Like basketball, there's plenty of players in the insurance game. So how do you choose the best one for you? For me, I look for character, passion, dedication, and like a star hooper, talent. Renaissance Insurance checks all the boxes and draws up the winning play every time. Let them find the perfect game plan for you. Call Ryan at 970-674-8825 or go to team-rig.com. Go Bears!
All right, tons to break into on this 13th day of January. We got the Two Man Game Podcast with UNC head coach Steve Smiley. I'm Brady Hull. Coach, my friend, first off, I want to talk about this because you don't get any time to celebrate it, but 100 wins is a big deal. 100
yeah,
wins
no,
is a big deal.
It.
You got that on Thursday.
Thank you.
But then you get like 4 seconds to think about it, and you got to turn around and play on Saturday.
Yeah, it's you win a game, and Thursday, Saturday games, and that's what our league is. And a lot of leagues are similar to that, you know. And I always joke around, like, I never want to be a football coach because, like, when you lose a football game on a Saturday, you got a whole week to stew on it. You can't flush it out. I'd rather be a basketball coach because, you know, you lose, you can get right back to it. But I will say this, that if you do have something, you know, some type of milestone or celebration or whatever it is, win a big game, doesn't matter. There's no time to celebrate it on the Thursday, Saturday. And Thursday night, you know, you get done with it. My brother was in town. He was down in Denver, so he came up to the game, and he was going to stay at the house Thursday night because there's a bunch of weather down in Denver, like 5-6 inches of snow, so he just stayed at the house. And you win the game, get the 100, and it's like, hey, we're going to go celebrate it all. It's like, no. It's like, you know, we can go to the house and celebrate real quick, but at the same point in time, it's like, it doesn't matter if you win or lose. You get that next scout packet. You get that. Before I even get to the scout, I'm going to always watch and cut our game. That's a 90 to 120-minute exercise for sure, just the basic cutting stuff. I've got to see what happened, good and bad, before I move on to preparation because it's still way more about our team than the opponent. And then, hey, you know, it's Friday. I think it was 1 o'clock staff meeting. Me with the scout coach, that situation was Dorian at noon. So at noon, at 1, and then we're practicing at 2. You have to have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
I have to have a basic plan so I have knowledge to meet with Dorian at noon so that when he goes and works with the scout at 1, the rest of the staff, I can convey the plan so that when we get on the court with the guys, they're all looking at you. What are we doing, coach? It doesn't matter if you win or lose. There's got to be a plan. And if you're trying to get any sleep at all, you got to get right to it. You don't have time to just jack around for 3 hours. I mean, 6 o'clock game, it's 8 o'clock. Just the simple math, it's 8 o'clock. And then you got your media stuff. You know, you pop on, you do the radio, you do the media, you do this, that, whatever. After you talk to your guys, and you know, you throw that last time was that sexy Sammy salad. You know, throw that in your belly at about 8:30 at night. I was sitting on the desk and throw that in your belly, and then you got to go. And so it's just like you just don't have time. And that's unfortunate, right? Like you know, I do. Like I always tell the guys, like you got to enjoy the wins. That's what was cool with CU was a Sunday. Our next game wasn't until Thursday.
Yeah.
You got to enjoy the wins because the losses are really hard, you know. And so, you know, we always are – it's like a funeral for the losses. So, like, if we're going to be like that when we lose, like, we got to enjoy the wins too. And I do believe in that. But just from a timing perspective, it's really hard. So, long story short, as I get right into babble mode is that, the 100 wins, it was cool. It was really cool. It was really good because we were 0-2. We needed to get a win. Get back in the mix. We did that, you know, and obviously we didn't win on Saturday night. I'm sure we'll talk about that too, but it was good for the program. We played well. We had a really good week of preparation and just trying to fix some things that we got exposed upon after the Montana swing. So I felt like we had a great week of prep, and it was great to see the guys play really well after preparing all week, and it showed on the court, played well, beat a really good Idaho State team. And so that part was really good.
What's tough about it, like I said, 100 wins is a big deal. And for me, as a guy that's been following you for ever since you got hired as the head coach here, I can step back and I'm like, wow, I mean, coach got hired and you, reflecting on all that stuff. The crazy thing is you win that on a Thursday, you get a turnaround play Saturday. You might, like this summer, I don't imagine you're going to step back and go, wow, at some point I grabbed 100 wins. Like you're probably,
is it fair
to say you'll never really reflect other than maybe this podcast right now on 100 wins. That's a big deal.
Yeah, you probably won't because, you know, at that point, hopefully you're not anywhere near 100, you know. And it's you just don't reflect much. I mean, obviously I knew going into it because, you know, our marketing team was preparing for it as well. So I knew it was – like I wasn't shocked by it. I knew it was going to be there at some point in time. And it was sitting there for both Montanas. We just couldn't get it done. Right? So we'd been sitting on it for about a week and a half. Mm-hmm. And now it's become like a little gnat floating around like, hey, we gotta win, you know, win a game here so we can get to 100. But, yeah, you don't get the chance to reflect much. And then, you know – You lose the Saturday game, and that was brutal. Like just not to say a bad loss. They outplayed us, but it's hey, we're 1-3, so we did not play well. We get beat, but from the family perspective, like I'm trying not to bring the doom and gloom to the house, right? Like, have you seen the Elway documentary?
I haven't seen it yet.
It's really good. He just talks about when they lose. You know, his kids are all interviewed.
Seen a few clips. Yeah,
and they're just like, oh man, when dad loses, like it's just doom and gloom. And I never want to be that guy. I want to be able to try to separate it. Even if I got to fake it a little bit, but the, you know, Sunday, you move on and we always have Sunday family movie night, right? So like, that's the one non-negotiable is we're going to have family movie night and the wifey is we're getting the dinner ready and stuff. And then she popped out with a little, like, it was like a strawberry shortcake from King Soopers. And she's like, hey, we got to celebrate 100. So we did it, you know, quick little kids were excited and stuff. So, like, we at least were able to do a little bit of that stuff, you know, behind closed doors. But you can't. There's not much other time to do much of that stuff.
I have two follow-ups for you. One might be a little deeper here on the competitive nature of a coach. But on movie night.
Yeah.
Are you able to put the phone away? Like, is it in a different room, computer, all that stuff gone?
Yep. The only thing that gets hard, like, let's just look at this next Sunday coming up. We have a game Monday.
Yeah.
So I'll still probably be, I'd say, probably be cutting, you know, kind of working on a few things while the movie's playing. And they understand that during the season. Like, when it's not season, not like I can put the phone away. But it's more so just cutting. It's just the film side of things. But in this situation now, we were able to put it away. Had a good day of, you know, recapping, preparing, getting all the stuff done we need to get done to start the week off, right? So this movie, yeah, I was able to shut it down and separate for sure.
Well, I would imagine during the season, movie selection is probably not the deeper ones, maybe, because you can't focus as much on those.
We're behind because, you know, for about 2 months, it was a non-negotiable. We had to do Christmas movies, so yeah. It's like Home Alone.
Yeah, you've seen those, so you can kind of work and watch at the same time.
So those were like, you know, hey, okay, I'm going to see it, but I don't need to be fully present. Mm-hmm. But like, I remember one time we watched Inception.
Yeah, or you have to be dialed in on that
thing. You
got to
dial in on that one, so, and then we only got – sometimes we get through the whole thing. Sometimes it's like maybe half the movie, then we'll finish it the next week. So we went Knives Out.
I heard that was good.
Yeah, the original Knives Out.
Oh, okay.
And you know, there's three of them now. And so we went with that, little murder mystery, you know, whodunit type of deal. So – and, you know, we'll do all the stuff. We'll do the comedies, everything. So it's fun. It's a good tradition.
I want to ask you about the competitive nature of coaches. Because you get into this – you guys are different. You know, I think pro athletes are different. I think professional coaches, whether that's college or pro, is different. And you talk about the wins, okay, neat, and then you move on. The losses, you say, you know, just stick with you.
Yeah.
What is that? Is it just you hate the fact that you lost a game? Is it thinking of the future, okay, will we ever win again? What does that mean for my career? Are we not going to establish ourselves in the tournament, what goes through your head? Because I hear it. You know, every coach says that, the good ones. Well, they say losing is way worse than winning. What is it that kind of manifests in your brain after a loss?
Well, what it is, first of all, it's not healthy. Yeah. I mean, that's just put that out there. Like, but it's like you try to, hey, you know, and we say this, like I tell the guys, you know, you got to treat the scoreboard. You know, the scoreboard's an imposter. Winning and losing is an imposter. We're trying to get better. What's beautiful about us, a different situation, like maybe – football, like, you know, back in the old school days, football, you lose one game, season's over, right? Mm-hmm. You can't win the national championship, you know. But for us, we have to be at our best in March to win 3 games in Boise. Now, that same point in time, you don't want to win 4 games in Boise. And if you go 7, 8, 9, 10, you know, now you're at 4 games. So, like, yeah, like, it still matters, the seeding and the chase. And but I don't know what it is. For whatever reason, you know, you just hate losing so much more than you enjoy winning. I don't know. And it's so true. And I think what it is, though, like at your core is you walk into every game expecting to win.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is.
Yeah. So you're let down every time there's a loss.
You failed. There's a failure. But when you win, this is what we were supposed to do, right? And I think, too, you become a little bit of a victim of success and where, you know, we're 10-5, but we were 0-2. 10-5 and we're getting ready for – we're kind of preparing for the Idaho State game. And we're 10-5 after having only 5 home games. Like, in this league, in this world, like this – you would be so excited. Like, it doesn't happen. You know, best record in the league, but we were 0-2, so recency bias – that's what Montana's like, man, you know, the world's caving in, this and that. And you could just feel that nervous energy, you know. And I don't know. I mean, I think you become, I think it's just your standards. You just expect to win. And when you don't win, you're a failure. Mm-hmm. And it's, you got to bounce back from that quick. But it's like you never walk in and say, well, you know, probably not going to win this one. Hmm. I think it's just kind of, you have to have the mentality you expect to win. And when you don't, you're just in shock.
Well, yes. And that makes sense too. I mean, even just from the media standpoint, you guys at the end you pulled away from Idaho State 85-72. It's a win. It's 100 wins for guys like me that follow it. It's like that's awesome. 100 awesome. Wins. It's great.
Yeah.
But because it wasn't like a sexy late game finish or anything like that, we turn our attention to the Weber State game, yep. And you go, "Wow, that was a series of unfortunate events down the end." That becomes the story.
For
not
sure.
The 85-72 win. And to be fair, it's the same in my brain because it's like, oh, nice win. Wow, that Weber State game was tight. You had a couple of miscues at the end.
Yep.
That becomes the story of the week.
For sure.
Unfortunately.
It's just the timing of it too, right? Recency bias. Yeah. It just is. It's the most recent thing. And I think that's you look at the NBA, they play 82 games. Like, you know, let's just say a team goes on a 5-game winning streak and they're rolling, but then they lose their next two. They're in crisis.
Yeah,
mode.
Sure.
But they've won 5 of their last 7 games. But we all do that. We all look at what was the most recent result. And I'm the same way. But the most recent result for the Bears is we got beat at home, against Weber State. And we didn't play very good. And it's like, man, like, it just sits with you.
Yeah.
Sits with you.
This game, the Weber State game, and we can get into kind of the stats on, I mean, how many games? I told Brock this yesterday, Coach. I'd have made $1 million if I would have bet on Quinn Danker, Zach Block, and Brock Wisney not hitting a three-pointer.
Yeah.
No threes. I mean, Zach, who's been phenomenal from
three. One of the best in the country, yeah.
0-3 from the line. Quinn Danker's been extremely solid. The guy just scores. 0-5, and then, of course, Brock Wisney 0-2.
Yeah.
I mean, first off, and we'll get to the end of the game there, but that's just basketball sometimes. That's why we see crazy games in March Madness. Sometimes teams that aren't hot get hot, and sometimes teams that are typically hot from the three-point line, you're just going to have those games where there's a lid on the basket.
You know, in credit, Weber State, like you said, Zach, 0-3, but the threes, we only got him 3 looks.
Yeah.
Credit to them by doing a great job of the way they schematically approach this, and, you know, we didn't really know. Like, we know what they do off the ball, but on the ball, they have 5-6 different things they might do. And they went full-out switch mode. We're going to switch everything. And when teams switch ball screens, off-ball stuff, it nullifies actions. It nullifies – you can run all these screening actions, but they're going to switch it anyways. Okay? All right, you're going to run a ball screen, which is, again, there's a reason everyone runs 50 to 80 ball screens a game. It's to put two guys on the ball and – now when there's 2 on the ball, if you have the right players and plays and stuff, then you can create rotations and advantages. Switching nullifies all that. Well, then you're like, well, why don't you just switch it? It sounds like the best plan. Well, when you switch everything, you don't control who guards who. Mm. That's the downside of switching. And so when you switch everything, you're saying, okay, we're going to switch everything. We're going to see if we can guard you one-on-one. Well, first on the perimeter, we're going to be able to guard you on the perimeter, but then 2 in the post. And we didn't do a great job of being able to break the switch, you know, creating offense on the perimeter. But where we really struggled was in the post. We had some big-time mismatches in the post size-wise, and we couldn't take advantage and give Weber credit. You know, we saw it too. We always test the coverage out the first 2 possessions of the game. And, you know, we're like, oh, okay, they're going to switch. Okay, well, let's go to this. And it doesn't mean you're running a play every time, but like, okay, when teams switch, our guys know what to do because we switch a little bit too. And we just couldn't get looks. And we were 1-for-14 from 3 as a team. So, yeah, you make 1-3 and you lose at the buzzer. That's painful, man.
Yeah.
But also, too, we only got 14 looks off, which I don't care if we get 14 or 43. But they did a good job of just deading stuff, and we couldn't beat them on the one-on-one stuff on the perimeter of the post. That's kind of what it went down to.
And the rare times when you did have some open shots, like Ibu, I think, had a couple of open corner shots. Is that sometimes a mental thing where when you are so tightly contested, when you finally do find yourself wide open, in that game, in that moment, you're kind of like, oh, wow, I got to go. And now you're not maybe going through your typical shooting process.
Yeah, potentially. And I thought we got a couple good looks in transition as well, but not enough. And, you know, Quinn had that really good look. He had that pull-up three, which was really uncontested in transition. It was a good look, just didn't hit it. And we got a rebound late. Like, you know, when we were up seven, with like 8-9 minutes left. And it doesn't mean we're like going to win the game, but like we made some catastrophic failure. Everyone talks about the last minute, and absolutely. But like we're up seven. And on both ends of the floor, we just made so many little, you know, minor issues that we couldn't keep it stretched out. We were up three. Quinn did drive, and Egan kind of ducked in and got Quinn a wide open layup, but Egan put his arm up and they called it on, and they should have. They could, you know, on that duck, he wrapped and kind of held the guy, and they called an offensive foul. Like little things like that just added up. Threw the ball away too much as a team at the wrong times. So we just, it was not good enough.
Yeah, well, and the ending sequence was crazy too.
Crazy.
So Weber State's up. I don't know. There's like 8, 7, 9 seconds. I don't know.
Yeah.
When Zach Block shoots the three, gets fouled on the 3-point line. You guys at that point, I believe we're down 73-69. So it's looking
we're down four.
Yep, you're down four. So it's like, uh-oh. Gets fouled on the 3-point line. I think even Jerry Schimmel said on the call, he's like, this changes things.
It does.
Zach Block goes to the line, hits the first two.
Yep.
Misses the second. Brock Wisney pulls down the rebound.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, take us through that last sequence.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, we cut it to one with under a minute to go, made some free throws. Then there was a foul in the inbound.
Yeah, that foul, yeah.
Okay, so, you know, I think they make both to get it up three. It goes kind of 3-1. Eventually, it gets to four.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's 73-69. 10 seconds to go. That's not looking good. But we do. We rip it down. You could take a two or a three. We get a look to Zach. They foul him. He makes the first two. He even asked, should I miss the third? Said, nah, man, like, make it. There's still 6 seconds left. There's enough time to do some stuff. 5.3 on the clock or six or something like that. But he did miss it. We had great effort trying to get the offensive rebound. Ball goes out of bounds. They call it their way. We use our challenge. We have our challenge. It was close enough to say, yeah, let's just try it. Ball's our ball.
Yep.
Challenge successful. Okay, now, during the challenge, we were able to drop kind of what we wanted to do on the play because, again, they're switching everything. They'd never digress from that. So, had a play on the baseline, switch everything, and they switched the guard onto Brock and the big onto, you know, whoever the guard was coming off the deal.
Yeah, you get the switch you want, right?
Yeah. In the backside, they were switching stuff, too, and we had them occupied. So, it really was one-on-one, and unfortunately, you know, Brock's arm got in the way and kind of tagged the guy in the head.
Mm-hmm.
It was an offensive foul. And, you know, if you get that ball to him, you got a really good player going one-on-one in the post with enough time, five seconds to go, and it was an offensive foul. Even to the point where they reviewed that to see if it was flagrant. And even Brock, like, I'm like, how bad? He's like, yeah, I clocked him. It's like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm preparing. It's flagrant. Game's over. Common foul, not flagrant, still their ball because it's an offensive foul. So they're not shooting free throws. So we're pressing them full court, almost get the 5-second call. They get it in, we foul. 73-71. Okay, two free throws. We have one timeout left because our challenge was successful. We'll see what happens on the first one. Okay, if he misses the first, we got a chance. If he makes the first, still might have a chance. But if he makes both, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So he makes the first, burn the timeout, ice him. Okay, bring the guys down, say, look, man. And I just told the guy, I said, hey, if you make second, we're screwed.
Yeah.
4-point game with 5 seconds to go. But if he misses this, we got to get it to the guard, go. We got enough time. They're not going to foul, you know, the foul up three. It's too close. Maybe they foul the free throw guy, maybe. But as soon as that ball is outletted, we're going to have a chance to, you know, chuck one up here with 5 seconds left. And then he missed. Great free throw shooter, 80-some%.
He missed. Yep.
And, you know, got the rebound, and they ran through the outlet, and they stole it. And it is what it is. If we get that ball safely outletted, especially with them running through, we now have a numbers break. We're gonna get a shot off.
You're gonna get easily across half court.
Oh, easily.
Probably right on that 3-point line.
Probably get to the 3-point line and see what happens. And it just, you know, just was not meant to be.
Yeah, it's tough. Was it Sane was on that free throw? I mean, he's like an 85.
Yeah.
I was looking because you called the timeout.
Yep.
To freeze him, which 100% I was looking online and people are like, why call the time? Why not wait? Well, if he makes the free throw and he's an 85% free throw shooter, odds are he's going to make it. The only thing you can do to defend him at the free throw line is to call a timeout and try to play the mental game.
There's not enough time to strategize after that. You'd be down two possessions with 4 seconds to go.
Right.
Mathematically, you're toast. And even if you got it, came all the way down, banged a three, there's maybe a second left, but probably not anytime. The game's over.
Yeah.
So let's just ice him, if nothing else, and just put a little doubt in his mind. And still, you know, the math says he's probably going to make it, but he missed it.
Yeah.
And we just didn't get a clean outlet.
No, I loved that timeout call there. Let me ask this. Full disclosure, Brock Wisney came in yesterday for the Brock Wisney Show. I got to admit that he's a very positive human.
Yeah.
He was, you could kind of sense it. He was definitely beating himself up. How do you manage that as a coach? Because, you know, we just had your boy on Sundance Wicks, and New Mexico fans think he's too hard on his players. You want to be, I know you're hard on your guys, but you're also really close to your guys. That's a really fine balance right there, because you got a player that's already killing himself over this, but you also want to be like, hey, we got to get this stuff right, because he's an extremely important player. How do you walk that line?
Yeah, I think if you ever kill your guys, it's because of lack of effort, which our guys played so hard in that game. I have zero complaints. Our guys played so hard. Or lack of detail, right, in the sense of, like, you know, mistakes defensively, things we prepare about. We talk about scout mistakes, things like that. If we're not detailed, our guys are going to hear about it. If we're not playing hard, like, we don't coach effort, right? Like, if you're not playing hard, we're going to have issues. We're going to play somebody else. And again, our guys played so hard against Weber State. There's no complaints. Our guys, you know, the detail, you know, in terms of the defense, and it wasn't good enough, and therefore we lose. But, like, in the situation of Brock, like, yeah, man, that dude's beating himself up. I'm going to give him a hug, man.
Yeah.
And it's like we told our guys yesterday, you know, in our meetings. It's like, look, I mean, yeah, a tough game, this, that, whatever. But at the same point in time, we're walking into 3 games in 5 days. Okay. Literally, what's today? Tuesday, right? So a week from today, we are going to be 4-3. 3-4, 2-5, or 1-6. Those are our four options. 4-3, we're right in the thick of things. 3-4, we're right in the thick of things. 2-5, we're fine. 1-6, it's not good.
Yeah.
It's not good. And even from the sense of, like, saying, okay, yeah, we're trying to chase a championship, and that's the expectation, but we want to win the whole thing in Boise. We're going to get to a point where we're going to start playing good again. I don't know when, but the sooner the better. But at the end of the day, seeding does matter. In this, there's a clear delineation. There's 10 teams in the league. If you're 1-6, you avoid the first day.
Yeah.
7, 8, 9, 10 have to play another game. That doesn't mean you can't win it. But if you're 7, 8, 9, 10, you have to win 4 games. 1-6, 3 games. So, like, at the end of the day, us being 3-4 or us being 1-6 after 7 games, huge difference. Us being 4-3 is great. We could win all these games. These are going to be hard games. They're all, like, our league is really good right now. Mm-hmm. I think everyone's seen that. It was like, man, Eastern Washington's 2-13. They just beat Montana.
Yeah.
Everybody's pretty dang good right now. So at the end of the day, yeah, like, you know, even, you know, my little walk with the wife on Sunday, because I'm upset. I'm human. And I'm like, I gotta make sure I don't kill these guys. I gotta be positive right now. Not fake. Like, they gotta hear the truth, right? Mm-hmm. Can't live in La La Land. But, like, we gotta find a way to get the best version of these guys, because we need to be confident going into this Portland swing, right? Like, the best version of us is awesome. But if we're all kind of second-guessing and half-stepping and this and that, it wouldn't change our effort, but our confidence level. So we got to find a way to inject a little positivity too. So we are very aware of it. Starting with, you know, the guys that have, you know, our three oldest guys, you know, the Brocks, Quinn, Zachs, those guys are wound so tight anyways, mm-hmm. which is greatest strength, greatest weakness, right? Greatest strength is, there's no bad days. Like, they're going to be dialed in. They're going to lift your culture. But they're wound tight, right? So it's like, okay, we also, you know, we need to breathe a little bit, you know, and it's going to be okay. And so that's kind of the pitch yesterday, too, as we get ready for practice day. But it's going to be okay.
It's just tough, too. You know, with guys like Brock, Quinn, Zach, those are three guys that you rely on so much on offense and defense. So offensively, they're going to have the balls in their hand a lot more, which means that's also going to open you up for more mistakes. Defensively, in Brock's case, a lot of teams, their best or second best player is their big man. So he's going to be getting switched on, all this different stuff that they're going to be scheming around. It's not an excuse, but with what is the old Spider-Man line, with great power comes great responsibility. The better you get as a leader on the team, the more open you are to possibly committing some pretty serious mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Portland State, who we're playing here on Thursday, you know, their three best players are three seniors: Jalen Henderson, Terry Miller, and Trayvon Minot. And Jalen Henderson's averaging 26 a game in league. Terry Miller's averaging 22. And they're also number two, number three in the league in assists. The whole thing runs through those two guys.
Yeah.
Our job is to find a way to nullify them, but there's a tremendous amount of pressure on those guys, right? But they're their best players, right? Trayvon Minot was the big sky defensive player of the year in the league last year. Tremendous amount of defensive pressure on Trayvon Minot, right? So, yeah, it's the same thing. There's pressure on Money Williams to make shots for Montana, right? You go through every team here and teams that kind of have that situation. Everyone's going to have, you know, leading score and this and that. So there is, but that's where you sleep easily. These are old guys that are veteran. They got a lot of scars. They got a lot of war wounds. They've been in a lot of situations. They've tasted a lot of success, a lot of failure. And so that's building that kind of that usage around guys that have been through it. It's a good spot to be in.
Yeah.
As opposed to young, talented guys. And some teams have to do that too. But the young, talented guys that just haven't, you know, been in as many college basketball games, our guys have been through it again. They've been through some success and failure, and that's okay. And so, yeah, but there's a lot of pressure on him. And Brock's seen more double teams than he's ever seen because he's good.
Yeah.
Team saw what he did against Texas Tech and this and that. You know, he's made some good reads out of the double teams. He's made some bad reads, and he knows it. And so it's like we just got to keep putting our guys in the right situations to put him in the best situation when teams double him, that he has the right outlets, because that's exactly what we want. We want, okay, you want to double us? You know, we get the ball out. Now teams are in rotation, scrambling around. It's perfect. And we've gotten better at that. We struggled as a team in the Montanas. We were awesome against Idaho State. We made 16 threes. Made 16 threes. Mm-hmm. 40 hours later, we made one.
Yeah, just take some of those and put into the Weber State game.
Yeah, so like the Idaho State was like, okay, boom, you want to double us. And we were, you know, Brock, Egan, all Quinn. We post up Quinn a lot. Perfect. And it just didn't synchronize as well against Weber State. So, again, it's not catastrophic. You just got to keep learning.
Yeah, it is fascinating. A guy we were talking about last week on the podcast, Ring Neary, who was kind of in that down.
It's awesome.
And then suddenly he pops up. So now if you can get that from everybody else.
For sure.
On the Ring Neary thing, Coach, do you see him kind of in that bench, coming off the bench role, is better for him?
Maybe, maybe not. But regardless, it's like he played 27 minutes. Like I see him as a starter level player, and he always has been. And so he played the 27 minutes. He was just awesome, right?
Yeah.
And but again, like one of our things is how do we get you around the rim more? He was 8 for 8 from two. And he's buying into that too, in the sense of like he can shoot threes, he can do different things. We gotta strategically find ways to get him around the rim because he's so athletic, he finishes well, right? So I think that was a sign of growth for our team. It was a sign of growth for him personally, but for our team too. Vince Delano, his offensive rating, you know, on the analytics is going up quickly. The best version of Vince offensively has been in the Big Sky. That's encouraging. Mm-hmm. We got a lot of encouraging things, but we got to link it all. If we're going to win these games, the guys that are playing, we got to get as close to the best version of as many of those guys as possible. Going to Ring, he was awesome. What a great game.
Yeah.
Well, and he played well against Idaho State.
He did. Yeah.
But he got in foul trouble.
Yeah.
And that was the deal there, is he was in foul trouble the whole night. But like he's really, that was a great weekend for him.
Now, coming up, like you said, Portland State. Maybe the best team right now in the Big Sky. Sac State, star-studded cast over there, of course, with Coach Mike Bibby. And then you got round two against Montana State on Monday.
On Monday.
And I know we're doing some big stuff, some big ticket giveaways and all that. People getting excited for some Monday night basketball. Yep. So that's awesome.
Yeah, it's a grinder. 3 games in 5 days. But again, like this is what you like. At this point in time, you want to play games, right? Like so, we're excited to get back at it. Portland State, you know, the 3-0. But at the same point, Weber State had them beat and missed a free throw, and the game went to overtime. Idaho State had him down 17 with 9 minutes left. Had him down 9 with 2 minutes left.
Hmm.
That's how close this league is.
Yeah.
So 3-0 or 1-2, it's the same team, but they found a way to get squeak those games out. I just think, again, I think our league is terrifyingly balanced.
Yeah.
I don't know what the top to bottom is, but I do think I have a tremendous amount of respect for Portland State. Play hard, good players, well coached. Their best, they've always been a nightmare to try to go against defensively. They're athletic, they're big, and they're the same this year, but they're really good offensively too. And so they'll present some challenges for sure.
Big stretch coming up, no question. I'm looking forward to it. Love watching this Bears team each and every week. Coach, we got to let you go pretty soon. You got to roll? I just wanted to ask you a couple things.
Yeah.
I don't know, did you follow the Washington story much with Damon Williams and the contract, the NIL deal?
Yep.
And now it was basically like, is it worth fighting it? That's what, to my understanding. So he will be staying with Washington after all that.
It's crazy. Like, I had to wrap my head around. I was talking to my son about it, and so I'm not the expert on it, first of all, full disclosure. But, like, yeah, he signed a rev share contract, NIL contract, with Washington for the next year, right?
Yeah.
Locked him in for, I think, $4 million, right?
Yeah.
Then he says he's getting in the portal. And at least the reports, I don't know if it's true, said, you know, LSU's going to give him $6
million. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Six is more than four. But you signed, right? You signed a contract. Now it gets into, you know, the legalities of it. And I know, like, the league, right, the Big Ten was involved because, in that league, they create the rep share. It's not just bound, I don't think, by the school. It's a league thing.
Yeah.
So the league's involved, this, that, whatever it is. And it is interesting, at least, to see that there is some teeth in those contracts.
Yeah, I thought for sure he was going to get out of it.
Yeah. So it's like, well, like, no, you signed a contract. So now it's like, okay, now the problem is this. You know, he's staying. He's making crazy money, fan base, teammates, right? Like, yeah, do you want to stay? Like, you didn't want to stay because you were going to go to the portal, but you got to stay because you're contractually bound.
Mm-hmm.
This thing's hard, man.
Oh, it's so hard.
Oh, man.
Well, and Coach, I read, you know, right before he said he was coming back, his agent dropped him. I don't know why. I don't know if
I didn't know that.
His agent dropped him. Another lawyer, and I'm blanking out on his name right now. Sometimes I'm terrible with names. Yep. Another lawyer picks him up. I follow this guy,
Darren
actually.
Heitner.
Yes.
Yep.
Great. Outstanding write-ups that he does.
Oh, yeah. He does a good job.
He posted
in this space.
On LinkedIn. He put this thing on LinkedIn.
Oh, really?
And it basically, to summarize, it's really long. To summarize, it was basically like, in some circumstances, you have to look at what's best for the kid and all parties involved. And in this situation, fighting this, which maybe we could have won,
right?
Fighting this was going to maybe keep him on the outside looking in, meaning all these teams are going to go get their quarterback. And then he's not going to be with Washington, but all the top tier teams that he wanted to go to have already grabbed their quarterback.
Right.
So it became a situation of, is it worth the fight, or should you just go back and play? So that was fascinating to me. It might be a turning point in college sports.
And I don't even want to say it's a mistake. I mean, I can't. I'm not judging, you know, these other situations, but I do think, you know, the forgiving nature of, like, you know, go back if you eat a little humble pie, you know, and say, hey, you know, my fault, whatever it is, and people in 6 months, 8 months, you know, he's playing well. People probably forget, right, in terms of the Washington people, or at least give some leniency. And I just think, too, like, this is such a new world and, you know, people are trying to figure it all out. And it's like, that's the first time I've really seen one that's like, no, this contract is ironclad.
It's crazy.
Right?
I did
Most
not
time
think
you
it
just
was going to
get
work.
Out of the stuff and, hey, we don't want a lawsuit. And
how does that work,
it's
though?
It's interesting.
Because the contract is an NIL deal, right?
I believe it's a rev share deal. Through,
it's a rev share.
Which
so
is NIL
it's
through the school. So you got the school, it's bound through the school, and I, you know, the more I've read about the stuff, those schools are bound from, or at least tied into the Big Ten, right?
Yeah.
The Big Ten does all the rev share contracts for the schools. So it's like, it's not just the schools make their own contract. It's more from even like the league perspective. So I don't know what it looks like, but it's got to be fairly ironclad.
I would imagine. And that's where I was confused with it because, you know, with the NIL contracts, if random external figure does a deal with Billy Bob, that doesn't really hold up.
These are internal.
The business is upset.
Yeah,
but
these are internal.
These are internal. And I didn't know that we were even at that point where we were making those kind of deals.
Oh, yeah. And
but
and
apparently
that's
where,
like,
we are.
This is the opt in, opt out.
Okay.
You know, obviously all the big schools opt in and they have salary caps, like the $22 million cap for the school from the NCAA, and the school can decide how to split up that $22 million, however it is, right? So this, I'm 99%, it's got to be an internal Washington's paying you, not KFKA or, you know, the car wash. This is University of Washington,
and that's
where there's more teeth in it.
And those will hold up. Like,
apparently.
And we'll see, again, with Darren Heitner, with his story, I'll send you the link if you have time. Not that you'll have time. But it was fascinating because it kind of summarized to, hey, maybe we could have fought and won. I reached out to him to get him on because I would like to know if he really thought he could win the case.
Sure.
If they fought it. And if the answer is no, then that could be a pretty significant turning point in the NCAA.
And even the fact that, you know, if he is staying and honoring that contract, that's significant for this portal, Wild Wild West. Like, hey, it's the first one, obviously, on this massive national scale that got out there in the media. So it is significant news for sure.
Yeah, fascinating. Coach, I know you got to run.
Cool.
Hey, your boy, Sundance Wicks, was on the show last week on the whole show, and he gave you a shout-out, too, the congratulations and everything. So
how'd he do? I mean, he scared anyone away in terms of, like, he's a little nutty.
He's intense. He's intense.
Like normal?
Oh no, he had lost that bad boy. It was gone. And you know, I was asking him about New Mexico fans because they were in New Mexico, and they were like, "How do they play for that guy? He's so hard on him." So I asked him about it. Yeah. He's like,
"I read the article."
I mean, he's passionate, but I don't think those players on that roster want it any other way. No. And I know you specifically spoke about that with Madden and his energy and why he wants to go play for a guy like Sundance.
Yeah, like, again, it just goes back to matching the right players with the right coach. And he, I mean, hey, man, he coaches guys hard, but his heart is of gold as well. So it's like you know who we both play for, Don Meyer. If you don't love basketball, you're not going to make it.
Yeah.
Because he's too hard. But if you love it and you drink the Kool-Aid and you're passionate about improving and being a part of something bigger than yourself and this and that, you're gonna love it and it's still gonna be hard.
Yeah.
But you're like going to like Sonny and those guys, like, it just, you got to match player to coach in terms of personality and this and that, and then it's fine. You can still coach kids hard,
yeah,
but you got to have the right kids.
Yeah. No question about it. And I remember us talking about Madden when I had Madden on the show. I was like, yeah, he's pretty intense, and he's like, oh, I love it, and you knew that, of course. Last one. Did you see the reporter interview with Liam Cohen, the Jacksonville Jaguars head coach, yesterday?
Sunday? So I saw a little bit of this stuff popping out, and people ripping a reporter for consoling the coach. I didn't know all the backstory until you and I talked about it. But yeah, I mean, enough to have a little opinion.
Now she basically said, "Hey, keep your head up. You galvanized the city," and she writes for like the Jacksonville Free Press, so it's not like she's doing 100% sports,
right?
But I come from it from a different – I didn't go to, like, journalism. I'm not a journalist. I'm not a reporter.
Right.
We want to entertain. So, like, you and I'll shoot you a text and say, Coach, congrats on the win. All that stuff's cool. But I know there's journalist friends of mine that would be like, I would never have Steve Smiley's cell phone. I wouldn't even
–
So, for me, I'm like, I don't see what the big deal is. I wanted your thoughts on that. If you're in a big game and you lose, and a reporter, instead of asking you a question, is essentially like, hey, coach, you're amazing, keep your head up. What do you think? Is that unprofessional?
I personally don't. I think we're all humans.
Yeah.
And there's human emotion. You know what I mean? And so, like, and the thing, too, is like, hey, man, like, as much negativities in our world, I mean, anything you want to get to, you turn on the news, it doesn't matter where you slant anything on any side of politics, business, religion, sports, it doesn't matter. You turn on any news, most of the stuff's going to be really, really negative.
Yep.
So, like, if we're going to be really, really upset about something that's actually positive, like someone giving some positivity, I would slant it towards, it's fine.
Yeah.
What's the harm in that?
Well, and he got torched for the way he said, you remember in the opening press conference when he said Duval, the way he said it. Fans are like, he doesn't even know the county he's in. So she kind of used that for him and was like, Duval at the end of it. I thought it was cool. Now, do we need to see that every single press conference? No, but it's the last game of the season. It's his rookie year as head coach.
Did a great job.
So it was to me, it was fine.
Yeah. We don't need, on either side of it, reporter or coach after every game, reporters, hey, coach, you're going to be okay. Like, Weaver just beat you, you're going to be okay. Like, you don't need that.
But right.
Again, things get taken out of context of, like, end of the year, did a great job for the city, galvanized the fan base. What's the harm?
That's where I am. Last one too, Coach, and that's why specifically I text you after wins. I won't text you after losses, man, because I'm not going to do the either way. I'm not going to say anything about the game. I'm not going to say keep your head up because you are a badass head coach. So I know only on the wins.
Well,
I'm shooting you a text.
Yeah,
I got to check that. Make sure I never have to shoot you a text on a loss. Double check
receipts.
But no, that for me, it's like, I like the relationships.
Yeah,
we can have pretty deep conversations. We can also say, hey, why'd you call this play when you should have called? But we also can get into the reality of it, too. So I come from a different standpoint. I'm not a journalist. So,
yep.
Coach, appreciate you, my man. Busy stretch for you guys. Starts up against Portland State on Thursday.
Yeah. Wish you the best of luck. Yeah, man. Just back in that flight tomorrow morning. Back at it 5 days in a row, so got to have a good one today.
And we're going to be giving tickets away on the whole show for Monday's big game, too.
Love it.
So people go to uncbears.com, right, if you want to get tickets for that game on Monday. It's a big one.
MLK Day, a lot of people don't work that day, which is cool. It's still a 6 p.m. game, but like, you know, big, big game. Like, let's get that bank packed.
All right, man. Coach, appreciate you. We'll talk to you soon.
See you, Brady.
The Two-Man Game Podcast is brought to you by Renaissance Insurance, Ryan Hicks.
What's up, guys? It's head coach of the Bears, Steve Smiley, and I'm honored to tell KFKA listeners all about my guy Ryan Hicks and Renaissance Insurance. Like basketball, there's plenty of players in the insurance game. So how do you choose the best one for you? For me, I look for character, passion, dedication, and like a star hooper, talent. Renaissance Insurance checks all the boxes and draws up the winning play every time. Let them find the perfect game plan for you. Call Ryan at 970-674-8825 or go to team-rig.com. Go Bears!